are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 30th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Oh, it's so casual, ladies and gentlemen, on this Friday that I forgot our opening. What is that, riff? Our opening package. Some reason I had Willy Wonka on the mind. Maybe I'll talk about it later. On the program today, ladies and gentlemen, since it is Casual Friday, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to look back on this week that seems to be continuing. Also on the program today, to give us a film or TV, some type of streaming media content recommendation, Film Guy Matthew will be in the house. On the program today, Trump off the rails again, ladies and gentlemen. Is drunk tweeting back? Twatterdoll. Is that what Tweeter? What do you call it when you tweet on Adderall? Meanwhile, Clinton in hacked audio reveals not as nuke trigger happy as some may think. Also, polls show the debate did not help Donald Trump. Congress overrides an Obama veto on JASTA, a measure supposedly to allow victims of 9/11 to sue Saudi Arabia in court. Also on the program today, Republicans reveal their Senate push hand. Online polls exist. And we're not number one. Russian air raids have killed more people over the past year than our air raids.
Just falling behind.
In Kashmir, India launches an assault. Pakistani fighters and people are being evacuated there. You know, it's always, when it comes to India and Pakistan, it's always one of those things like, if they catch a cold, right, we all get pneumonia. So it is definitely worth, you know, it's always a concern where you start to see that they have a little bit more of a heated conflict as opposed to the sort of ongoing cool conflict that they have. Coolish, tepid conflict. We may get to more of that today. I just want to take the opportunity to do this. That is for Lauren. She is a listener since day one of Air America. Member for a while, and it's her 62nd birthday today. She gets a shofar. Also, good time to remind you the shofar blast is that Monday is Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year. And as I traditionally do, I will be taking time off of work to celebrate. On Tuesday, we will have you're going to notice no difference, except for you get more content. That's the way we celebrate the New Year around here. It's like we give you digitized and audio versions of Apple and Honey.
More and more and more.
Give, give, give and give.
give.
So Michael will be doing Monday as he normally would, and as he attempts to run from his own faith as a regressive, because he's so pro-Muslim, he can't even bring himself to contemplate the idea of celebrating.
You know how long it's the battle to get a prayer rug in here? Off the show. Every time you hear a long gap without a Trump impression, I'm in the corner praying in Mecca.
There you go.
Getting one of my five.
And so he will be doing Monday's program. Then on Tuesday, we will run a pre-recorded interview that I will have done with Professor Jay Rosen on the media. On Tuesday night, we will do live coverage, after sundown, of course, of the vice presidential debate featuring Mike Pence. And I don't know why I said featuring Tim Kaine.
I'm already.
It'll be the two vice president.
I think we will be intervening a little bit more.
We'll talk a little more. It's going to be interesting to see if it's going to be interesting. Let's put it that way. It very well may not be interesting, but it could be fun. And it gives me an opportunity to leave the house and drink.
It fun.
So,
yeah, exactly.
And that happens only really when there's debates. I don't know what's going to happen after this election's over. I'm never going to be able to drink again.
I'm sorry, family. There's a debate.
I
there's
must
YouTube,
go do some work.
And there's beer.
Of course, we will do live on our YouTube channel, and we will put out for members just like we did the last debate. And then the rest of the week shall proceed as if nothing happened. Until we get to the following week, of course, and then it's Yom Kippur and we start all over again. All right. We're going to take a... what was it? What did I want to talk about? Oh, yeah. This one more piece. Hillary Clinton. So apparently an audio recording of Hillary Clinton was released. I can't remember what the website was. The Washington Free Beacon. Is that thing still alive?
It's kind of surprising.
Apparently, it's a right-wing site that I guess still exists. And they got a hold of this audio, which was apparently, according to some, part of the DNC leak of emails, and apparently this audio is there. This is going to be very upsetting to some of our friends on the left who are convincing themselves that Hillary Clinton's plan is day one launch the nuclear weapons. I'm not sure where, but it's a great way of telling yourself that Donald Trump's can't be. How much worse could Donald Trump be? I mean, if Hillary Clinton blows up the world on day one with nukes. I mean, could Donald Trump really do anything worse? And so,
crooked Hillary's secret nuclear plan.
And so what you do, I guess, in this situation, as I've observed, is you convince yourself that Clinton is going to do it on day one. And if not day one, then literally before she's her inauguration, so that she's that much worse than Trump. This is going to be I imagine you're going to see a lot of YouTubes about this coming from those sectors. Hillary Clinton expressed doubts about whether the United States should go forward with a $1 trillion modernization of its nuclear forces at a fundraiser in February, questioning an Obama administration plan that she has remained largely silent on in public. Well, wait a second. Oh, so she won't do this in public, but she does it in private. I'm just trying to guess, like, what is going to be the hook here, right?
I'm trying to usher in the 12th Imam's appearance. She's messing it up.
A former Defense Department official present at the fundraiser, Andrew C. Weber, raised the question about nuclear modernization and verified the contents of the tape, but also suggested its release as part of the same hacking campaign that exposed the DNC emails. At the fundraiser, Mr. Weber asked Mrs. Clinton about the modernization push and whether she, as president, would cancel the cruise missile which he called a particularly destabilizing, dangerous type of nuclear weapon. Well, I would imagine, according to everything I've been told about Hillary Clinton, that a particularly destabilizing, dangerous type of nuclear weapon is exactly the kind of weapon she would want. But instead, she said, yes, I would certainly be inclined to cancel that missile. The last thing we need are sophisticated cruise missiles that are nuclear armed. God.
Wrong.
This is going to be a big issue, she added. It's not just the nuclear-tipped cruise missile. There's a lot of other money we're talking about to go into refurbishing and modernization. Do we have to do any of it, she asked. If we have to do some of it, how much do we have to do? That's going to be a tough question, so I will look to people like you and Bill Perry to help me answer that question.
Don't believe a word she says. She lies and she lies and she lies. We all know she wants to have a nuke on day one, so I can't enjoy myself in the White House. That's the plan. It's all revenge and grievance. She killed Vince Foster just to watch him die.
And this is obviously, this is classic Clinton. Right?
Classic Hillary doublespeak.
Classic Clinton. She specifically doesn't say this in public and only says it in private on a tape that will be leaked so that we believe it more when, in fact, it's not the true her true disposition. Brilliant.
She knew that
Brilliant
it would be
strategy.
Leaked, and she knew you'd be reading this story. You're playing right into her twisted, veiny, mangly, evil, witch-like hands. She's evil. She must be stopped. And here's the thing with Donald Trump. He could be bad, but I don't know how bad. I don't know. It's a wild card. Hillary Clinton, I know it means the end of the world.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a quick break. It's Casual Friday. We're going to bring Cliff Schechter on board. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. Now, there may be a lot of podcasts that have theme songs for their guests. There may be a podcast or two that has a theme song for our next guest, Cliff Schechter. But is there a podcast that has a fan base that sings the theme song to Cliff Schechter, like Lefty Uno did on Twitter in his car?
Cliff Schechter, Levitas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Levitas LLC.
Now, he seems to play with the tune just a little bit. We'll have to listen to the original to get a sense of that. Did you not have the original? All right. No, we'll do the suspend. Cliff, welcome back.
Thank you. That was awesome. We need to have a contest for people to send in. It'll be like, Finding America's Next Star.
Yes.
All you have to do. Go ahead, Sam. You tell me your version.
No, I think you're right. I would love to encourage people on Twitter to put out their version of the Cliff Schechter theme song. In fact, you can do every theme song you want.
We should have to come up with a prize for one of them, though.
Yeah, I think that's we'll do a T-shirt.
Do a T-shirt. See, there you go.
Boom.
Donald Trump will tweet you in the middle of the night. Go ahead.
Kelly's claiming she was singing it this morning. As soon as she hears about the T-shirt, she just jumps right in.
I was singing it this morning when I was looking up your picture for the YouTube broadcast. But
weird.
I was like,
that's oddly reminiscent of. So let me get this straight. At 3 a.m., Kelly is looking up Cliff's picture and singing his theme song. Cliff,
don't be sexist, Samuel.
Well,
be
I'm
careful.
Just curious, Cliff, what were you doing at 3 a.m.?
It was right before the show, Sam.
Oh, okay, what happened?
I was freaking sleeping at 3 a.m.,
really?
Which is not a guaranteed thing in my household. So we've got 2 children and 3 cats. You know what I mean? Any number of things can wake me the fuck up.
I understand. Wow.
I'm glad I was sleeping last night. But if I'd known that Donnie was going to be up tweeting such gloriousness, I would have stayed up just to sort of experience it live.
Yeah. Fill people in on that, because I imagine most people know at this point, but not necessarily. It's possible people are not aware of what was going on at this morning at like 3 a.m. So
if we want to take it down to a Nietzschean level, you know, there's the wanton blonde beast that is Donald Trump roaming the land, not paying attention to your Christian morality, attacking, weaving, just, you know, living life on the lam. And for about 4 or 5 weeks, not sure how she did it, maybe with Scooby treats, who knows, Kellyanne Conway got Donald Trump not to behave like a normal person, but
normal-ish.
Took the Twitter controls away. He didn't, you know, pick on someone who was, a minority and just get into an out-and-out war with that of words, or just really the war of words coming from him for the most part on Twitter and everywhere else. And it seems that all that she was able to do, and again, I don't give Kellyanne Conway any credit for having any morality. I give her credit for whatever it is she was doing that was sort of keeping him semi in line, having him tweet to, you know, had a great crowd at blah, blah, blah. Awesome crowd, big crowd. You guys are all, you know, and stupid things like that, but not anything so self-damaging. But we've just gone through a week that's much like the Curiel week. We had one of those with the judge that was just previously that happened over Trump University, the lawsuit. And then the one we had with the Khan family over losing their son, and Donald Trump thinking he can insult them for that reason because they questioned him for attacking them. In any case, long story short, I believe the timestamps were 3 something in the morning and 3 of them at 5 in the morning. So clearly Donald Trump sleeps a lot. He tweeted out stuff, that not only attacked, what's her name? Machado. I can't think of her first name.
Right.
It's not coming to me.
Alicia,
the former Miss Universe, about just the fact that she's a liar and she's this and she's dishonest, and how could crooked Hillary rely on her? You know, because Donnie only hangs around with like Roy Cohn and Russian mobsters and stuff, so he should question other people's associations. But he actually claimed, and this is a conspiracy that's been proven non-true, that she has a sex tape and encouraged people. This is a guy that theoretically could be president in 6 weeks or elected president in 6 weeks, was encouraging all the United States on Twitter, at least, or all of the world on Twitter, to go looking for her sex tape.
I mean, this is what's amazing about this. And Cliff, we haven't spoken since at least on this program about the debate. And we are 5 days out now from the debate, and this dude is waking up or not going to sleep, because he started tweeting, like you said, at 3:20 a.m. So he's awake for those hour and a half. And at 3:20 a.m. last night, he said, anytime you see a story about me or my campaign saying sources said, all caps, do not believe it. There are no sources. There are just made up lies. So obviously, like, he watched something where somebody said something. And then by like 5 in the morning, he's gone through a couple of tweets and he launches this thing. And here is the point that is why this is so important in terms of a campaign. We are 40 days out from an election. The candidate now has spent 4 days trying to, in some way, impeach the character of a woman who he called fat and Miss Housekeeping because she was Latina. And
in 1996 or something.
And, like, this got under his skin. Here is the problem for, as to why this is a bigger deal. Here is I want you to listen to this. And I think it sort of is the perfect example of why, this is a problem. This is Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge, who they bring out presumably as a surrogate because she's going to be one of the people who talk about how horrible Bill Clinton was 30 years ago when he was governor or something like that. I think at this point, Leslie Rutledge was probably in junior high. But nevertheless, she knew what was going on because
everybody knew.
She's interviewed by Stephanie Ruhle on CNN. And just listen to this. This is amazing. I've never seen like a surrogate meltdown like this. I mean, she's got to give her the college. She's doing her best. But I mean, there's no this is a thankless job. Here we go.
Quote, did crooked Hillary help disgusting Alicia M. become a U.S. citizen so she could use her in the debate? And he pointed people to what he called a sex tape. Joining me now, Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge, a supporter of Donald Trump. Good morning, Leslie. Help me here. Attacking Alicia Machado and saying he wants to keep this bright and clean. Is this bright and clean to you?
Well, it's unfortunate that this issue was raised by Secretary Clinton during Monday night's debate. She's the one that jumped off in the ditch. Back comments from the 90s. And so it's unfortunate that it turned to that rather than turning to jobs and the economy and national security. So while it's not helpful for the American public to make a decision talking about these issues, I think that Hillary Clinton took us here.
Okay, that was Monday. This story was dying down. Donald Trump told the millions of people following him on Twitter, our children who in their own little schools have their own little elections, look at a sex tape. And it wasn't just Alicia Machado. Monday night, he doubled down and said,
First off, so here you have this attorney general saying that it's Hillary Clinton's fault for triggering Donald Trump. And he can't control himself. And, I'd never contemplate this, but like, can you imagine if they are doing a mock election in like some like a seventh grade class and the guy playing
Trump. And they're
going
to see this on the news because my kids, what they pick up, we talk about in the car and we try not to talk about things like sex tapes. But it's amazing what your kids will hear you say. So there are kids across the country that will hear that. And I'm guessing there's going to be a negative campaign run against a sixth grade student council member, accusing somebody of making a sex tape.
Well, even if they do a mock one, imagine you're the teacher and you're doing a mock presidential debate and the person playing Trump brings up a sex tape. You as a teacher, what are you going to say? Little Billy, don't do that.
Don't do what the actual guy running for president.
Right, exactly. Yeah, some little kid is just up there like, she gained a lot of weight. She's a fat girl. And so
I'm trying to run a business.
All right, let's let this roll because it gets worse for Arkansas Attorney General.
Now, Rosie O'Donnell, they're universal. He's been saying this for years.
Well, again, Secretary Clinton is the one that jumped off in this ditch, Stephanie, and it was not Donald Trump. Donald Trump was responding. Again, I think that we have seen for the last several months that he has been focused on talking about jobs and the economy, bringing back jobs to the inner cities of America. And it's the Democratic playbook to want to drag up issues from the 1990s.
He didn't.
But they don't want to talk about their own issues from the 1990s. Those are off limits for the Clintons.
At 3 a.m. last night, he didn't talk about jobs, the economy. At 3 a.m. last night, he started a tweet storm that said, check out a sex tape. How is that Hillary Clinton? Those are Donald Trump's words. That's Donald Trump's doing. Do you agree that that's a good strategy for him?
Not too much.
I am a fan of tweeting during the waking hours of most folks, and so I'm not up tweeting at 3 a.m. generally, so I don't know that that's great advice, but you know, perhaps there are people up interested in issues at 3 a.m.
Okay, whether he tweeted it at 3 a.m. or 3 p.m., calling a woman disgusting, saying you should look at a sex tape, is that a good idea?
It is ill-advised to viciously attack women or anyone for that matter.
Well, there she goes.
It is ill-advised.
It is ill-advised to viciously attack women or anybody else for that matter. Well, good for her.
She has found some new ground, a new moral compass.
Wow.
Listen, here's the thing. They don't have that many days left. And, you know, I was wondering because, again, I have to admit, I was concerned. The problem is that people have short memories. We all do. And so even though Trump has done so many horrific things during this campaign, in a way, you know, there's desensitization. There's the media going off on the Hillary email trail and the Clinton Foundation being, you know, with again, talking about the way things look, which is fine. Maybe that is a story. But they were doing that for long periods of time when the Trump Foundation seems to be everything they think the Clinton Foundation is. And so, you know, people didn't have real context. And in a manner of speaking, if this guy could have held it together, I mean, if he's sitting there at 3 in the morning, he could be saying to himself, in 6 weeks, I would have said lean Hillary. I mean, it still was a lean Hillary election that you know, at the time, before this whole thing happened. But it was very close. It had gotten very close. And he certainly was within the distance of being able to win this thing. And you know what? Sadly for all of us, 6 weeks from now, he'd have the power to be in the, up in the middle of the night tweeting at whoever the hell he wanted to. Because he would have been elected president. And there's nothing any of us. But with all that knowledge, knowing that if he could just hold it together, which I'm sure every one of these people that works for him has tried to tell him in one way or another, he just could not do it. And that should just answer every question. I mean, I think these questions were largely answered long ago, but again, as a reminder to people, how this person has literally that little self-control, that this is something way out of the past. It shouldn't have nothing to do with what's going on today. He can say whatever he wants after he's elected president, but he cannot even hold back in the wee hours of the night. Just imagine the demons that Donald Trump deals with. And you know, look, this is going to mean, this, you know that what's going to be asked. I mean, it's not like it's a boring Donald Trump money story that the media's eyes glaze over. He said the word sex tape. So we can all figure out what's going to be asked on Sunday shows, on every single one of them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So this is going to ensure that this thing that started Monday night goes basically a full week.
Oh, I think I would bet it's going to go until Wednesday, because on Tuesday night, Tim Kaine is going to say, do you, I mean, let's talk a little bit about this debate that's coming up Tuesday night, because Tim Kaine, I have no idea what to expect with this debate. This debate could be completely just vanilla and no point. Although I find it hard to believe that they're not sitting down with Tim Kaine right now and saying, like, the whole debate is going to go like, you're going to pretend you're Sean Hannity. And you're going to pretend Mike Pence is anybody who comes on your show. And you're going to pretend like it's, you know, 2009. And you're basically going to make Mike Pence disavow every single thing Donald Trump has said for the past 16 months. You're going to, like, there's not going to be a single question. I mean, I would imagine this is the way it's going to go, where Tim Kaine doesn't go like,
smart,
I wonder if Mike Pence if agrees
smart,
with Donald Trump that Alicia Machado is a little pig. Do you? You know,
right,
like,
but if they were smart, they would also, and you know, and I think they will do this because they've done some of this, which is tying the things that Trump has said and done to the issue positions that Pence takes.
Yep.
Because Pence is so far out of the mainstream on women's rights, on abortion rights, on equal pay, on all of these things. He's a lunatic to the far, far, far extreme on any issues dealing with women's rights and so and gay rights and a number of issues like that that put that so that it would be smart to kind of tie the bigotry and the anti-women attacks and everything to Pence's policies and make him defend them. And, you know, I'll give Pence credit where credit's due. I mean, he doesn't have a personality disorder like Donald Trump does. He seems to holds it together. He speaks in sort of a soft way for the most part that hides the kind of monstrous policies he supports. So I don't think anything like huge is going to happen where he's going to get, you know, say something that's going to get them into trouble. But it's just it's going to be constant if they do this right, of Kane bringing up things Donald Trump said, asking Pence if he supports them. Pence is going to have to change the subject, like he will. Then also tying it to Pence's policies on abortion and gay rights and things like that. On those issues, you know, the bringing up things that Pence has agreed with in the past, like rape, you know, and but if someone's raped, you know, the woman's body being able to shut that whole thing down. He came out for that too, and some of that kind of stuff. He's going to have to ignore that stuff too. So basically, he's not going to be able to answer anything, because his positions are out of the mainstream and will lose them the exact voters they need to win, and his running mate's insane. And so, you know, he should lose on points, because all that Tim Kaine has to pull off is, you know, being likable enough, which Tim Kaine is pretty likable, be likable enough, be competent, and continually question the man, put him on the defensive so that he has to change the subject. That's essentially what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I think it goes into that debate and beyond. You know what I mean? And then the question also just becomes, you know, they've now lost Trump back to where he was pre 5-6 weeks ago. So can he recover again, or is this just the way it is the next month?
I don't know that he recovers. I mean, one of the things that becomes clear is that, you know, there's been a back and forth in terms of who's dominated the news with bad news for them. And we're now back into a realm where Donald Trump is dominating the news with bad news for him. I mean, it's also, you know, it's also just sort of like absurd that the presidential election is going to be determined by the question, is this person so psychologically damaged that they shouldn't be president? I mean, that's
but that he got this far. Is, you
yes,
know, I mean,
yes, it's all to, you know, just we. This country needs a timeout. Is really what it means.
This country needs a timeout to look at its democracy and ask, because there are people that are just as unhinged and just as in a bubble and idiotic. I think right away of Paul LePage and Rick Scott, and in Rick Scott's case, it's even more horrifying. He's had. Hello?
Hello, you there? Sorry.
I'm here. Okay. I hope it's on my phone dying. That would be bad. He's ruled, eventually run one of the biggest states, you know, in the country for this period of time. And he's done a terrible job. He won't allow people to talk about global warming. So even if we don't have somebody like this being elected president, in the case of Donald Trump, because of the way the media covers elections, because they don't tell people the truth, because they don't share what policy proposals are actually realistic and which ones aren't, we have these types of people in red states and purple states being elected who are hurting us and hurting people. And this country needs to take a time out and say, you know, one of our major parties, as, you know, Paul Krugman, Norm Ornstein, and any number of other people point out, has become basically an authoritarian cult. It's not functioning. And its only way of kind of being elected is by rigging the rules, by stopping people from voting. Yeah, that is my phone, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Can you hear me on this one?
Yeah.
Same thing. Well, let's hope this one works. And so, you know, they need to question themselves the way they have done during this election with Trump, and the way the New York Times and others seem to adjust their coverage and start calling him, actually using the word lying, and talking about when he said he was for something and pointing out in chyrons places that he's not. But those have been like the few exceptions, and the Farenthold, I can't ever pronounce his name, and Kurt Eichenwald reporting, you know, have been the two things that have held this all together, because they've exposed so much stuff that other journalists should have been exposing. But it's really been those two guys. I mean, during this week when all this was going on, we found out that the guy who wants to reinstate the embargo in Cuba tried to illegally trade with Cuba, which actually was one of the first stories I've seen gain legs. I don't know why. I don't know why some of the other stuff that Eichenwald reported had not. And then Farenthold did the report on the fact that his foundation was not even registered to raise as a C3, that he's been illegally raising money this whole time. Now, normally you'd think those would be two huge stories. They've been part of the Donald
I'm
Trump
super
week.
Competent. I missed one paperwork. What are you going to do?
I mean, it's ridiculous, right? And so I mean, didn't Rick Scott commit the greatest act of Medicare fraud in the history of the country? I believe so.
Yeah.
And he's a sitting governor, incumbent governor of Florida. That should have never happened. But the media did not do its damn job, and he had all the money to spend in the world. So when they didn't do their job, he filled in those blanks for people with all of his ads. And he was able to, you know, the same thing with LePage. I mean, some of that was splitting the vote three ways with two people running as progressives in Maine.
It was all that, I mean, to a certain extent.
It was, but he should have never even been able to get a third of the damn vote. You know what I mean? Like, they're not doing their jobs.
But I don't think, I mean, to be honest with you, I think there's at least a third of this country that doesn't give a rat's ass about any of that stuff that we've been talking about.
I
honestly
agree.
Think, like, you know, I don't think they care one speck. I mean, there was polling that showed, you know, how many Trump supporters now have basically given up on the Bertha thing because Trump came out and said he's an American citizen. Oh, okay. Well, we got that resolved. I mean,
no, I agree, Sam. But Paul LePage was reelected in Maine with something like 45%. I don't believe that 40. And I've lived in Maine, and again, you know, no, with no offense, because there's plenty of great people in every state, but Maine is not Alabama. And I don't believe 45% of people, if they knew what there was to know about Paul LePage, would have pulled that lever for him to reelect him. I just don't think. I think that what's been obvious to all of us is the media has fallen into a we need ratings, we need to entertain, and all the other stuff we've talked about, and they've been broken for a good 20 years now, at least. And it's been getting worse and worse and worse. And they're not doing their jobs. So we've got people being elected to real jobs in a democracy where they can hurt people. And I'm not saying this means, oh, my God, we can't elect any conservatives. There are a good number of people that are competent and conservative out there who I would disagree with to my final breath, but I know could actually run a government. Those two people I just mentioned are not two of them. And there's plenty of others. And that's the timeout that we need. But I don't, you know, can you ever see that really happening?
No.
Exactly.
No, not whatsoever. I mean, I interviewed Professor Jay Rosen about the media's handling of Trump and why it's been so overwhelmed. And it's and he has a very interesting theory about how the political media in particular has been sort of kicking the can down the road, ignoring certain changes in reality, and they haven't reacted to the way that they approach covering these things, and now it's catching up with them. But
I read his paper. Yeah, he wrote a really interesting article, which I assume is why you had him on.
Yes,
and I
exactly.
Read that. And the danger is, look, again, I believe in this, you know, it's funny because these people argue for American exceptionalism on the right, and then they do everything to degrade and destroy this country. I don't like using the word exceptionalism, obviously, because it's got a lot of bad connotations. But I will say, as somebody who's a history major and studied politics, I do think this country has been an amazing experiment and has lasted longer than virtually any other democracies, even with the our original sins, of which there were many. And I would never try to cover up some of the terrible things that have been done here. But when you compare it and you look at human history, it was a pretty amazing. There were some pretty amazing concepts in the Declaration of Independence and in our Constitution and other documents since, and there's a lot of reason to be proud of what we've done. And what we're doing right
time
now.
Time to wrap it up, though, right?
I'm sorry? Well, we're about to wrap it up.
Time to wrap it up. Let's roll it up and let's just call ourselves Southern Canada and get it over with.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're turning it over to that. We're letting all that stuff, we're watching people kind of disrupt and destroy everything about us, embarrass us internationally. And we're accepting that. And, you know, look, all we need to come along next time is a smarter, slightly smarter, not even very much smarter. Or how about this, a fascist without a Twitter account? Because in the end, it's not his terrible policies, it's not his incompetence, it's not any of those things that are going to stop Trump from getting elected here or coming very close. It's his unbelievable cruelty and lack of self-control and having Twitter at his disposal.
Right. It's really literally just like access to a Twitter account. I mean, if Kellyanne Conway had some way of like creating a mock Twitter app on his phone where it looks like he's actually posting to Twitter, but not really posting to Twitter, then maybe he would be winning by this point.
And now that Ted Cruz has gotten in line and endorsed him, there's every reason to believe that Ted Cruz could be their nominee in 4 years. And he is every bit as fascist, every bit as crazy, every bit as much of a flim-flam artist as Trump is, but he has more self-control. And so I'm just saying, you know, these, unless the Republican Party, somehow the people in there who are sane take it back and it fundamentally changes itself, which I don't see happening either, then, you know, we're going to be right up against this with somebody who maybe is just a Donald Trump, but a smarter version of Donald Trump that doesn't get themselves in as much trouble. And then we're in trouble.
Yeah, you know? I'm not sure there's such a thing as a smarter version of Donald Trump, to be honest with you. But
I
guess
it's Ted Cruz.
I would tend to agree.
I think it's Ted Cruz, you know.
Let's before we wrap any of this up. I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about this this override of this legislation, but I can talk about it afterwards. Chris Christie, we haven't touched base.
you and I are going to be vindicated, because remember people were giving me crap and saying, oh, you said he wasn't going to finish his term. He's gotten away with it. No, he hasn't.
Now,
I think right now there's an incredibly good chance he's going to the pokey, and the only question is, can he delay it long enough so he does finish his term? But either way, he's screwed.
I think he's in trouble. They're already talking about impeachment in New Jersey. His numbers, his poll numbers,
I think like 15% or something at this point.
As of today, I think the headline was, Chris Christie's poll numbers have officially reached Nixon territory. Nixon territory is not a good territory.
It's not a happy territory now.
It's a bad territory.
Couldn't happen to a sweeter man.
He's at, I think his 23% is his favorability rating. I think it could actually be lower than that now. And but here's the good news for Chris Christie. They're talking about the Trump campaign is talking about bringing him in to handle the debate prep.
I guess Rudy G and Mr. Ailes did a bad enough job on the debate prep last time, which was really they couldn't. I mean, these guys can't do anything. They're not going to be. Donald Trump can't focus, so it doesn't really. I mean, he has ADHD on ADHD. So I mean, I don't. But you know, bring him in. What the hell? Only the best people, of course. It should be interesting.
We need somebody to come in here and show me how to be nice and get along with people.
Exactly. Who can help me talk to teachers like they matter? Chris Christie.
I wonder if they bring in Chris Christie to show that that Trump is not about fat shaming. Honestly, I wonder if their demented mind, like, get the fattest person we can find in here to prove that I don't have a problem with fat people.
But isn't this the most amazing crew of like misogynist bullies? Like it's like flypaper.
I mean,
think about it: Christie, Giuliani, Bannon, Ailes, Trump. But besides, I don't know. Christie may have actually be married to the only person he's ever been married to, which in some ways is not as much about his personality as take a look at Chris Christie. But the other people I just named, I think every single one of them has three marriages to their credit. So each of them has some domestic violence accusations against them. Bannon, Trump, maybe the others.
Ailes,
obviously, a serial sexual harasser. I mean, these are the people. But, I mean, it's not an accident. They've all gathered together.
It's a real shame Bill Cosby's black, or he could be here with us.
And you know, the last thing I'm going to say on that is that I still think Hillary would have won. But what's been very helpful here in terms of the Senate races is seeing New Hampshire and Pennsylvania and places open up into large single-digit leads again.
Let's talk about this as the last thing, because there was a piece out today that shows the Senate, the Republican Senate reelect pack, essentially, or I should say elect pack, has dumped a huge trove of cash, $21 million more. They are doing television buys in New Hampshire, North Carolina, Indiana, Missouri, Nevada, Pennsylvania. They are pulling out of Wisconsin and Illinois for two different reasons. Wisconsin, because I think they know Russ Feingold is going to win. Ron Johnson is going to be an ex-senator. They're pulling out of Ohio because they know that Rob Portman is going to win. Ted Strickland, not the best choice, I guess, to run against. Talk briefly about this idea that Ohio, this is aside from the Senate races for a moment, Ohio now seems to be not a swing state of the highest order in terms of the Clinton campaign's strategy to win.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, look, I hate saying it because, well, I happen to live in this state. But as the parties have changed, and again, Donald Trump just sort of put this all on crack, kind of like himself when he was in the debate the other night, which is college-educated whites had been, especially women, had been heading away from the Republican Party over their social issue insanity, you know, more and more in sort of the recent election cycles. White working class men who had once been Democrats, some women too, more to away from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party, especially rural ones, city and suburban going more Democratic, and minority voters going in to the point of where, you know, Hispanic, Latino, voters and Asian voters, not quite African-American levels in terms of supporting Democrats, but getting to the 80-85% level in this election. We'll see that too. So what does that mean? Well, you already saw Missouri, you know, two election cycles ago, move away from being, it used to be a preeminent swing state too, because there are a lot of, outside of St. Louis in the suburbs, a lot of rural areas, a lot of white, not, you know, non-educated or not college-educated voters there, and the Republicans, even before Trump, that was starting to become more of their base, so that started leaning in their direction. States with growing minority populations and white college-educated populations, you've seen Virginia is probably the best example of any of those, have hopscotched over other swing states to go from being a red state just, you know, a decade ago to being pretty strongly leaning in the blue direction now. So where does that leave Ohio? Well, Ohio has a number of decent-sized cities. I'm sitting in one of them, Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland are others. There's some smaller ones. But there's also, especially in the northeastern part of the state, I mean, huge manufacturing job losses, a lot of angry, the types of prototype of angry white males without a college education that have left the Democratic Party to go for Trump. And so what that's meant is that when you're looking at, let's say, Florida, North Carolina, and Ohio, you've got Florida, which has got a very large minority population, especially Hispanic voters, and so you've seen Florida start to trend in a direction where being a little bit more Democratic. Mm-hmm. North Carolina, Research Triangle, a very big area of college educated whites, and it's got a growing Latino population. So, and it's a big state, 15 electoral votes, worth making the effort. So, if you're looking at those two, and you're looking at Ohio, I hate to say it, but overall, the cities do make us so that we're not, let's say, like in Iowa or in Indiana. It makes it a more Democratic state. But those areas, those heavy rural areas of where you used to have these working class white Democrats, they've all switched to the Republican Party. So, you know, I don't think we're going to sort of match anymore until the minority population, the college educated population is growing here slowly. But the minority population, the only area, Ohio, Ohio mirrors the country, yet on Latino voters, we're very much below the national average. And unless those areas start to tick up, Ohio is going to still be a swing state. It still is right now, especially after this debate fiasco. We're right back in it, but it's going to move a few points more Republican. I just think that's inevitable. While states like North Carolina, you see it happening with Georgia, you see it happening with Arizona. Same formula. I'm talking about large minority populations, large college-educated white population are going to continually move in a Democratic direction.
So
I wouldn't go. So it's not going to be a red state. People think something like that. You know, I mean, eventually, if it's possible. But no, I think it's just going to be a one that Democrats need to win by 5 points to win the state.
All right. So let's go quickly over this list here. The Republicans obviously have poured a ton of money into Florida. But, Marco Rubio, if I had to bet, is going to be the next senator from Florida.
The only question is how this Cuba thing, does that hurt him or not?
Right.
Enough. I think I would have given it to him almost 100% before. This puts a slight question. I still think I agree with you. He probably wins.
Portman is going to win in Ohio. In New Hampshire, the Republicans poured an extra $7 million into this race, which is indication that this could go either way, right? I mean,
I still think that if it ends up being more than a 5-point win for Hillary, that Hassan wins and we take that seat. And that's the way I feel about Toomey in Pennsylvania too, that those two are most reliant upon what happens at the top of the ticket.
And remember, Democrats need four to swing the Senate. That's assuming that Clinton wins. And then I guess Kane would also be a tiebreaker. So between New Hampshire and Pennsylvania, there's two. North Carolina, they've increased their participation there by a million.
And so the Democrats, they'd already poured $8 million in there a few weeks ago because Burr is such a bad candidate, sort of the opposite of Portman. He's lazy. He doesn't raise enough money. And we have this candidate who's a former state rep with not that big a name, who in the most recent polls, in all of them, has been a couple points ahead. I think she's going to win.
That's Deborah Ross, and it remains to be seen. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day who had worked on the Martha Coakley campaign, and it's interesting to just get, like, how within the campaign there can be a lack of awareness of what's actually happening on the ground because there's a certain amount of overconfidence, and then just sort of like an inability of anybody in the campaign who may or may not understand what's happening to get the national apparatus engaged because they're not aware, right? They don't have any more knowledge about what's going on in a state than the people working on the campaign. And that Burr situation sounds like one of those situations where, like, He just won't believe that he's going to lose. And,
that's right.
And he could get it could happen.
The one that's the toughest to predict, and I hate to say it, but I think that maybe we lose it, is Harry Reid's open seat in Nevada.
Yes.
Nevada is interesting in that it's got two trends going on that are almost at odds with each other in what I was talking about earlier, which is it has a huge number of white, working class, non-college educated voters. It's increased a lot because a lot of jobs around the gambling industry that where you don't need a college degree have grown out there. At the same time, it's got a growing minority population. They've kind of equaled each other out. So it hasn't gone as blue as some of the other, like a state like New Mexico out there or Colorado. But Heck is a good candidate. I hate to admit it, but he's raised money. He's run a pretty solid race. I'm hoping I'm wrong.
You never know. It looked like Harry Reid was going to lose, I think, like two races in a row, and he pulled it out. And I'm not sure exactly how that happens.
Maybe just based on that. Any which way, if you lose that one, but you take the four that we just discussed, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Illinois, Wisconsin, then you need one more,
right.
And that could be either North Carolina or even with them spending a ton of money, Evan Bayh still looks like he's up more than 5 points, 6, 7, 8 points in Indiana.
Yep,
their name is still a brand there.
They've dumped almost an extra $5 million into that race. The Republicans dumped an extra $5 million into the Missouri race with Roy Blunt and Jason Kander. Jason Kander is like one of those Democrats that we will never be happy even exists, frankly.
You mean with how conservative a Democrat he is?
Yeah.
And some of these others we're talking about, I mean, Evan Bayh is no champion of the left.
Indeed.
But right now we're just trying to get to 50 or preferably even 51 or 52. And Kander, credit where credit's due, has been running, from everything I hear, the ads that I've seen, has been running a phenomenal campaign.
Yeah, he runs an ad apparently where he builds a gun blindfolded.
Well, but he also makes the point during that ad that he's very much for background checks.
Right.
And, so it's that's what makes that ad powerful, is that it's somebody who's been in war and knows their way around guns and is using that as the basis for why we need background checks. I think that there could be one or two surprises there, which are sort of the tester or height camp of 12, this year, of 16, those happened in 2012 where we weren't expecting either of those. They'll probably be much like Tester and Heitkamp, as you pointed out, not Democrats that we love to have. But again, I'm thinking long game of Supreme Court, circuit courts, appellate courts, and things like that. And getting past 50 would be hugely important. And the thing about...
Oh, so you're one of those types who think the courts are matter. Okay.
I'm one of those crazy types.
Yeah.
I ain't no Jimmy Dore, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
I'm just kidding. That guy's cool.
Right, Cliffy. Well, always a pleasure, Cliff. And we'll talk to you next Friday.
Why, yes, you will.
All right, fantastic.
Have a good week. Don't get in any more fights with comedians. Don't tweet sex tapes in the middle of the night.
I will do my best.
Take it easy.
All right. All right, folks. I was just getting mean texts from film guy Matthew. Texas? Texts. Text. Mean getting mean texts from film guy Matthew. Like, hurry up. You know what number to call, right? So, that's why we went over with Cliff. All right, we're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, film guy Matthew will give us a suggestion as to what we should watch this weekend. I guess we'll have to wait and see. We'll be right back after this. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report, and this is the theme song that introduces the next guest. I wanted to see if there was one more after that, because I don't know if I ever realized there was that many film guys sort of like just fading off. What do? You get like a Doppler machine? How does something like that work?
You'll have to ask the great Jason Pace who created that song. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, Matthew, film guy, how are you? Thank you for showing up on the program.
My pleasure. What's up there, Cux and Kelly?
You son of a bitch. You horrible, horrible person.
By Christ's sake.
Yeah. Cover my bases.
No, I understand. Well, I think we're all doing great. Still in, you know, vague sense of shock from the bomb that you lit off the last time you came on this program.
I had no intention of lighting a bomb, but, you know, it's sometimes things go a certain way, and, you know, you look back and you say, maybe it should have gone a different way.
That's the kind of figure you are, right? I mean, that's just simply the kind of figure you are.
Fear-based.
A fear-based figure like that.
Fear-based? Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Tell me more about that. How am I fear-based?
Well,
oh, no, you tell me. What do I know about fear-based? I hear fear. I know fear. I mean, what do I know?
All I know is what I hear on the internet. Chat room at the Majority Report.
That is a very disturbing thing to only know.
Now, do you do this type of thing? And you're for those people who don't know, Matthew is not only a filmmaker and an editor, he's also a professor. Is that the title they give you, professor at the Jewish Community Center Annex film course?
I believe it's pronounced professor.
Now, how do they just call you Matthew, or do they call you teach, or what?
They call me Matthew. They do. It's very informal at the JCC in Forest Hills. We don't stand on ceremony. We don't use titles. Just I'm Matthew, and they're Edna and Joyce. You know,
Edna and Joyce. Are there just two? Give us
those
the first.
Only two. Those are the only two I remember. I know faces more than names for those
You've
people
been teaching
out there.
This class for years.
I know it's gone too far past the point where I can ask them again what their name is. You know how that is.
Oh my gosh! Why don't you do like a? I want to do an experiment. Could everyone write their first names down here in their seating chart?
Yeah, I'm thinking back, I should have done name tags.
How many people are in the class?
I usually get about 20 on average. Sometimes it goes down to 15, depending on the weather, up to 25, depending on the
day of the year. Wait a second. So, Matthew, you've been teaching this class for, 3 years at least now?
Yeah, 3 years.
And you only know the name of two of the people out of the 20 in there?
And at least one of those I made up.
That's incredible.
I know a few of them. I know a few, but it's like... you know them sort of by their behavior. There's
no, I'm not saying that you don't totally.
There's the grumpy one who always hates the movie. There's the one that always has to come up after class to talk 10 minutes more. So it's, I know something deeper than just their name. That's just on the surface, Sam. I know them inside. I know their emotions.
But wait a second.
Their feelings.
Now it sounds like you wouldn't even recognize like 3/4 of them. When you say, I know that there's one who's grumpy, I would assume you know all their personalities on some level. You've been teaching them for three plus years, and there's 20 of them.
I'd say the common people who have been with me throughout the entire thing, there's probably a hardcore 10 or 12. But, hey, Sam, I'm here to impart, the beauty of the art of cinema, not to necessarily be their best friend, it's... Part of what the seniors get from coming here, yes, is companionship, but I think it's more from each other than from me. So I'm okay with where we're at.
Well, obviously you are. You've chosen not to learn their names. I guess if we're going to be that honest, there's a person or two in this office whose name I can never remember.
Oh, yeah? Is it Matt?
I can't say. I literally, that guy. Let's just put it that way.
It's like I said, it's too far past the point where it's polite for me to not know their names. So that ship has sailed.
That is really stunning.
But when I teach editing at Sacred Heart, now that I get a new semester every year, now I make sure to pass a piece of paper around. They have to sit in the same chairs. They all write their names down. There's I have to, it's like a, my lack of ability to remember names is like a handicap that I have to work through. And now I've got tricks that I've learned from doing this to get past that. So look, it's not intentional. It's just one of those things. Some people are not good at remembering names.
I guess so. It doesn't really sound like you've made a huge effort though. I feel like you spent more time coming up with a justification as to why you wouldn't know their names after.
Why don't you just say Bubbalo?
Bubbalo.
Yeah, what's so hard about that?
Bubby. I call them all Bubby.
Bubby and Bubbalo.
They love it when I call them all Bubby.
See?
No, Sam, the justifications for me, they just come fast and furious. They just come right out. I don't have to work on those at all.
So what else are you up to at this point, Matthew? I assume you know when you get a job with somebody, I assume you know their name, right? The people who are...
That's right, Sam.
Good job, Matthew.
Thank you.
How'd you?
I do a lot of corporate work. You know that. That's
right.
Been the way that I've paid the bills, sucking Satan's pecker, as Bill Hicks said. But in those cases, they don't need to know my name necessarily. I just need to know the client's propaganda message, and I put it out there. It's not necessarily a personable environment when you're working on those jobs.
And how is your eBay store going?
Oh, man, you guys just missed it. Unfortunately, they didn't overlap with today's visit, but I just unloaded about $500 worth of my mother's old antique license plate collection. So that, gangbusters.
Wow, you got $500? How many license plates is that?
I don't know, about 30 or 40 of them. They were all like $10 to $30 each. It was fantastic. It was great.
And so what do? You have all these in your house, and then you just, like, do you do all the fulfillment yourself? Is that it?
Yeah, that's right. In my spare time, in between my corporate work and not doing your promo, I do that.
Okay, I see. And
In all honesty, I can't wait to do the promo for the Majority Report. I've been waiting for a lull in the high-paying jobs to do the ones that I'm actually emotionally invested in. That will eventually come, I promise you.
Eventually come, I promise you. I thought that we had already to sort of determined that was going to happen, like, now. I thought, like, that we had, you had said...
Yeah, now-ish, definitely now-ish.
Hmm. So, Matthew, what have you been watching as of late, Matthew Film Guy?
I've been watching my usual mix of art house and foreign films mixed with the year's biggest superhero blockbusters. But actually, I wanted to ask if you had seen, this is not what I'm recommending, but it's ancillarily related. If you'd seen the Louis C.K. show Horace and Pete?
I have.
Did you watch all the episodes? I've only watched the first one so far, but
I'm still, I think, two or three shy.
Well, that hooks into what I wanted to actually suggest this week, which is something that he had name-checked in his podcast with Marc Maron.
Mm-hmm.
He had said that he was inspired by Mike Leigh's Abigail's Party. Have you guys ever seen that?
I have not seen that.
No. Wow. Well, that is this week's blockbuster recommendation. It's actually not available on Netflix, but I think it's on YouTube. So it was a TV play done sort of live, and that was, I think, you know, Louis, just as a sidebar, I love Louis C.K. as a comedian. I really respect him as a television comedian, and I love the show Louis. In some ways, he's kind of a dilettante because he's cribbing from things that he really respects, and I love his taste, but he's kind of, you know, taking from the surface of things. He wants to sort of be more serious and a little more, I guess you would call it, experimental, and I think that worked really great in his Louis sitcom. It was unlike any sitcom that had ever really been on, and it was because of those kind of weird art house influences. And he sort of takes the aesthetics of the television play from Mike Leigh. And it's cool that he says he wanted to make something that doesn't exist in the current media landscape. It's not necessarily a laugh a minute. It's got no audience, no laugh track. It's sort of shot on a stage. It's clearly a stage, sort of like a three-camera sitcom, but with a little bit more of a cinematic bent.
Sounds like a real winner.
Yes. Thank you, Right Wing Mandela.
It's like a Masterpiece Theater in some ways.
Exactly.
Except more boring.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny is that Mike Leigh himself talks about Abigail's Party, which started as a play in the West End of London, and it was a big hit. And then he went on to shoot it on television live with no audience, and he hates watching it because he's a filmmaker, and he didn't have the kind of visual control over the story that he does in his 40 other movies.
Right.
And he's sort of looking back on that saying, like, I can't stand it. Louis looked at it and said, I want to do that. I want to have that look. So I kind of have mixed feelings about the impulse there, but so far I'm into Horace and Pete, what it is able to capture of that. But the thing that Mike Leigh can do that Louis, I don't think, can do is play such depths of subtext and have these characters really appear to be human beings. I mean, not that the things in Louis's films aren't based on real life and real emotions, but they're sort of overwritten like a comedy writer. Everyone's a little too clever. Everyone's a little too jokey. Everyone's having too much, too many smart thoughts in their mouths. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah,
but
I do.
Abigail's Party is... the characters just are. The themes are not spoken. They're not really, called out. They're just displayed. And the characters are flawed, but they're hilarious and they're incredibly attractive, even though they're kind of like train wrecks. So just to give you a bit of background, Abigail's Party is basically about a middle-class family in London being very ostentatious about how, you know, middle class they are as opposed to working class. And it's Beverly is the host of this party that she has for her neighbors. And she goes about her business in this way that says, like, look at me, I'm so, you know, upper class, or, you know, I'm so upwardly mobile. And it's just a comedy of manners based on how every single person in that room is pretending. They're playing some role. They're playing some kind of behavior. And it's not the kind of pretending where they know they're pretending. They're actually pretending to themselves, which is the deepest, most amazing part of it. And that's something that I think Louis could aspire to, but in what I've seen, he hasn't quite captured yet. But if you want to see the real uncut, you know, pure shit, check out Abigail's Party. It is amazing. You'll be surprised at what you laugh at. You'll be surprised at what you're horrified by. And it's just basically unmatched. I mean, Mike Lee has made, you know, 40-some movies. All of them are genius. I love the earlier ones that he made for BBC television because they all are these slices of life. And as some people may know, he developed these through improvisation. Now, it's not improv on camera.
Right.
But he would get the actors together for months at a time, ask them about the characters that they knew in their own real lives. And that's actually how Abigail's Party came together, just like all of them. The actors give a list of characters that they could play. He puts them in different situations with each other. They start to write down some of the things that they've improvised. And eventually he puts it all together and comes up with a script, and then they shoot that script. So that's why a lot of his early movies say devised and directed by Mike Lee, because he doesn't take, you know,
credit
for writing it. But it's such a genius process. There's one book about it that I've read twice. It's really amazing to see this method and the results, because it always results in something you couldn't make up, something that just came out of drawing from real life experience. So this is why this is very inspirational.
Do you think,
and it's why I commend Louis for aiming for something like that, because a lot of people have aimed for that. A lot of people say, I want to work in the Mike Lee vein. He's just picked up on, I think, some of the more surface elements.
Do you think that a methodology like that could even happen in the U.S. for the most part? I mean, let me explain, because my understanding of at least particularly, you know, prior to the last, let's say, 10 years, where it seems like British acting has exploded in some ways. But my understanding of the British movie scene and sort of just the acting scene is such that you could actually get really, really good actors who would take that much time on a project like this, you know, or is that, am I just being, as opposed to in the U.S. where it's like, wait, you want me to work for 4 months, on developing a film?
Right. I don't even actually think Mike Lee could start up and be Mike Lee today in England. That's how much the commercial cinema has taken over. I mean, now he can still do that because he's Mike Lee. And he still does do that, even when he's doing these sort of historical dramas that he started to do in the later years, like Topsy Turvy and Mr. Turner, because he has the clout and he has the ability to pay them for that entire time. But yeah, it's very hard. You know, I worked with the filmmaker and actor Tom Noonan.
I was going to say, I was thinking
he was able to do that. But he hasn't done that in, you know, 15, almost 20 years. It's hard to get people to commit to do that. And would they necessarily be A-listers that you could get for that? You'd have to pay them. It's just the way it goes. You know, if they're not working, they need to be getting paid. So it is a difficult thing. But that's why you find a lot of that method being used in the lower budget film world, like the
right.
Mumblecore sort of size of things. You know, my friend Lawrence Levine, I recommended his movie, I think the first time I was on the show, Gabby on the Roof in July. He developed that over months with actors that were not paid, but, you know, you get pizza and some beer and stuff like that. And we did a series. I actually had a small role in it, and I helped develop it through that process because you had the freedom to do that. But, yeah, you're right. It's absolutely close to impossible to commit. I don't think any agent would recommend that their, you know, person would do that to the extent that they are, that he did in the 70s with Mike Lee. So, yeah, it's a shame in a lot of ways. But you said that British acting has exploded. In my experience, British actors pretending to be Americans has exploded, right? Like, how many
yes.
HBO shows do you see that are all American characters played by these British actors doing an amazingly straight American accent? So it's kind of like the American commercial cinema has sort of consumed even that sort of a British acting.
I think my understanding is that has a lot to do with financing. That a lot of some of the stuff is shot over in Great Britain, and they need a certain amount of British actors. I don't know if that's the case or not, but
I don't know. You know, that may sound good on paper,
but it does
but
seem
sure
like yeah.
Good.
I mean, it does seem like you know, half the leads of every TV show I watch, I listen to an interview with them and I freak out and I'm like, wait,
exactly.
What?
And it comes up like some of them will do the interviews in the American accent just not to freak out their audience. I mean, it's like Walking Dead, right?
Like 90% of the people on that show seem to be British.
Yeah. Andrew Lincoln, the lead, he's a complete, you know, his Georgian accent is incredible. The girl who plays Maggie, I forget her name, she's British.
Yep.
It's bizarre.
It's crazy.
So, it's crazy. But Sam, can you do a British accent?
Hello, Governor.
Yeah, maybe that. I was going to say,
here
I
come.
Send some of our people over there.
I've just got off my dolly, and I've got to go up this loo or lift. Then
your dolly?
To use your lift.
Oh, your lorry? Is that
yeah,
it?
My dolly, which I came from my lorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, all right, so I guess they're safe. I guess they're okay.
And then I have an Australian one, which is the exact same accent, except for I say, good on you, mate.
Yeah, there you go. And that's another place. Actually, you know what? Did I mention this the last time I was on? I can't remember anything else about the last time I was on, but did I mention this?
That's not a knife. This is a knife.
Oh, yes. Crocodile Dundee, 30 years
that's
old
right.
this year.
That's right.
But the Fawlty Towers, you know, the great British sitcom, which I'm sure you're a fan of that,
of
right?
Of course, yes.
They're doing a live run, and John Cleese is directing that in Australia as we speak. And he chose Australia because, in his opinion, they are some of the greatest actors available these days.
Interesting.
So
We're,
you know, Americans, we need to step up our game.
Well, yeah, I don't think...
American acting is, may I say, getting cucked badly by the rest of the world.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's a perfect button for your segment.
Yep.
So the movie, Abigail's Party, available on YouTube.
Yes.
On YouTube. All
check
right.
out YouTube. It's great. I know, you know, these days we have a huge media diet and people are making lists and listening to books at twice speed and things like that. You can also watch movies at twice speed. I've heard some people doing. That's really crazy. Don't do that. But I suggest you make some time to make the screen big. Don't watch it in the little 2x4 window. Sit back and absorb all of the little nuances of Mike Lee's Abigail's Party. Please.
And do you subscribe to the Majority Report YouTube channel?
I do. I do indeed.
Good. We've exploded with subscribers. We're going to hit 100,000, I think, by the time the election comes.
And is that Indian company you hired?
That's right. They're all fake.
They're all real.
As far as we know, they're all real.
Well, right. Yeah. We didn't hire anyone.
Film Guy Matthew, thank you so much for your time today, bud.
My pleasure, Sam. Take it easy, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Kelly, did you have a recommendation you wanted people to watch?
I just wanted to say that I am excited to watch the Amanda Knox documentary that came out today on Netflix.
What is that?
Well, she's in it is sort of the difference.
Who is it?
Who's
some broad
Amanda
killed someone in Italy, right?
Oh, that story?
Yeah, so that whole story. So there's been a lot of different documentaries and everything like that, but she's in this one, and they've kind of been... Yeah, Amanda Knox is in it, and they've been really promoting it, so they seem to do a good job.
Is this HBO?
No, it's Netflix.
All right.
So I haven't seen it yet, but I've been looking forward to it because it's an interesting story. And you know, say so. If I say so, I mean, it's horrible. Someone gets murdered, but, you know.
All right.
Sorry if that was like a spoiler for you.
Well, now it is.
I mean, I think it's 10 years old or something like that.
I'm actually 11 years behind. Okay. So I'm working my way up on that. Ladies and gentlemen, this program relies on your membership. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Go there. Become a member. Let all your dreams come true. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon or from Jet.com, do so through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. Not to be confused with JoinTheMajorityReport.com, ladies and gentlemen. Also, if you are wondering about any of our deals that we have for you, like the Casper deal or the Ring deal or the Audible deal or the, what else do we have? The Harry's deal. Go to majority.fm, get to the homepage, and then click on support our sponsors. We have most of them listed there. And if there's one that's missing, send us an email and we'll make sure that we put it there. All right, folks, going to head to the fun half. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We've opened up a couple of lines for libertarians. I've been maligning Gary Johnson. Now's your time to carry the torch.
Whoa, maligning. What's that again?
Be right back.